Welcome to Health Connections, a show about people, health, and policy. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. And Dr. Carol Myers and I were just talking a moment ago about how we're both kind of homebodies. We like to get home at the end of the day, have a little alone time when we can. But there's a different kind of alone time, something that's fundamentally different, called social isolation. It is a risk factor that can impact quality of life and health, especially for older Americans. And so that's what our episode is about this time on Health Connections. Social isolation. Dr. Myers, what is social isolation? How do we know it when we see it?
The most commonly used definition that we see is lack of meaningful contact with others. And usually it's not by choice. And it is a significant risk factor, as you said, for poor health as well as the increased death. So it's getting a lot more attention. And you might ask, why now?
Why is it so timely?
Mm-hmm. 25% of Americans, and this is all ages, have no meaningful social support. 50% of Americans report having no close confidant or friend outside of their immediate family. Now, for many of us, that's hard to conceive of because of the relationships we have. But for a lot of people, that's their reality. They don't have that support. One study found, a very recent study, that 14% of Medicare-eligible individuals, those are generally people over age 65, but not exclusively, are suffering from social isolation. 14%, that's a big number. That number is growing. And as they did interviews with Medicare-eligible individuals, they found that some can go over a week without any contact, not seeing one person. And this includes also phone calls and other things. So I like to get away, but there's a limit to how much I want to do that.
As you and I frequently talk about on Health Connections, a particular problem or issue has many fathers. It has many contributing factors. What are some of the causes that lead to social isolation in America?
It's interesting. And a lot of these factors that we talk about, the things that we talk about, social isolation, suicide, gun violence, so many of them have common denominators. Things such as your education level, things such as your economic status. But there are some unique factors to social isolation. Longer work hours. I mean, that one's obvious. The more you're at work, the less you're interacting and having meaningful relationships with people. Headphones. Walk around our campus at University of Tennessee.
This is true. I can vouch for what you're about to say. Yeah.
And how many people make eye contact with you rather than looking down? That is a decided sea change in the last 15 to 20 years.
As I said, it sounds like a contributing or a related factor. We're talking about headphones. We're also talking about smartphones, tablets, the devices that we're craning our necks down to look at even as we're walking, riding the bus, in these what would normally be perhaps social situations.
Right. And then we still have people, their screen time consists of watching TV, lots of screen time. So screen time is a pretty all-encompassing term. Also, sitting in traffic. I've told you before, I drive an hour to get to the university, 2 hours a day in the car. Mm. That contributes to social isolation. It's time that I'm not available with my family and friends. The other thing that's really important as we look at, again, sea changes in our society is looser family ties. So we see families that are dispersed across the country, around the world, people going in different directions. So looser family ties also contribute to social isolation.
We said earlier in the broadcast here that typically social isolation affects older Americans, but I want to drill into that a little more specifically. Who is isolated? Who is most at risk?
Well, first off, we want to start with the idea that it does not include maybe your first thoughts, a single person living alone. It doesn't include just old people. It can include people from every population subgroup and every age. But the big concern where you're seeing a lot of media attention right now is older Americans. They are at particular risk. Think about that phase of your life cycle. You're losing friends. You know, you go to a lot more funerals as you get older. You're losing your family members. You begin to have the onset, many people, of health problems that just in themselves cause you to be more isolated. People with disabilities, just this morning I listened to Marketplace, and they used the astounding number that 19% of Americans have some sort of disability. Well, people with disabilities, particularly certain disabilities, are at higher risk for social isolation. Brandon, sorry to tell you, but men are at higher risk than women. Depressed people, and this one's interesting because depressed people are more likely to be socially isolated, but it works the other way too, because socially isolated people have a higher incidence of the onset of major depression. So we need to untangle that, but we know there's a relationship.
In previous episodes, we've talked about maternal mortality, we've talked about Medicare and Medicaid, we've talked about the opioid crisis and gun violence, sort of front page type health issues. On behalf of that listener who says, I don't know, this seems kind of soft, why should we be concerned about social isolation?
Okay, I'm going to answer that in two ways. Hypertension gets a lot of people's attention. We understand that it is a very serious problem and it has very serious health effects. Well, we can look at social isolation and in some ways compare it to hypertension. Oftentimes, you have the condition a long time before you have the diagnosis and the harm has been done. So let's look a little bit at the health impact. People with social isolation, as we've already said, are at risk for poor health and increased death. Earlier death, it's associated with a lot of troubling problems, insomnia, people feeling disconnected, which exacerbates the problem. That's affecting your quality of life and your satisfaction with your life. When we look at children who, for whatever reason, are socially isolated, they carry that risk all the way through adulthood. They have significantly worse health when compared to children who weren't socially isolated 20 years later, even after looking at all the other factors. It puts an individual's social isolation at increased risk for cardiovascular disease, the number one killer in our country, infections. It adds to the hypertension and also premature cognitive decline. You think about another epidemic in our country where we're trying to increase awareness and trying to find prevention and early treatment, cognitive decline, or what we would call dementia. There's some studies that are beginning to suggest that there's a link between social isolation and a tendency towards addiction. Now, there's some people that all of this doesn't really resonate with them. Some people we have to grab their attention with dollars. A recent study by AARP showed that the cost to Medicare for social isolation for Medicare-eligible individuals is $6.7 billion extra every year. I also want to consider something that perhaps a lot of people, it's not their first thought, but when older Americans are socially isolated and removed from their connectedness to their social and other groups, we're losing a lot of information, talent, contributions that could be made. So we can't afford that as a society. We need to tap into all of our social resources. And I'd like to think, particularly at my age, that the older people really have something to contribute to our society. And we should be concerned about that.
I imagine that since social isolation is not, as I said a little earlier, a front page type health issue, that it's difficult for people perhaps first to recognize it as a problem, and then ask for help. What are some of the barriers to asking for help?
Well, stigma. I think stigma's big. You know, you admits that I have some sort of failing because I don't have these loving relationships that I see in the movies or I see on TV or maybe I witness with other people. So there's stigma. But I also think, Brandon, it has to do with the bigger issue of there's just not a lot of awareness. That was my motivation in wanting to talk with you about this today. So I think we need to do a lot about increasing awareness. A lot of people don't think it's valuable if it's not something we're attuned to. So I think that also says that we need to have a tool to measure this. You know, I came from business, and the adage in business is you can't manage what you don't measure. So there's a lot of discord about how to measure social isolation. So we need a good measure. Then we need to use that measure to increase screening. In public health, what we're trying to do first and foremost is to prevent a problem. So we can look at ways to prevent social isolation in a minute. But we also want to diagnose it early, because the earlier we intervene, the better the outcome. We need more research. What intervention works? There's a lot of ideas floating around, but they've not been empirically tested. And then there are other more simple things we can do. Increased access to transportation, again, a big issue in the rural areas where I live. Increased access to technology. Now, it's interesting. Technology contributes to the problem, but technology can also help to address the problem. We can connect people through technology. We can remind people of, you know, certain things, do social cues, a lot of things we can do with technology. Pets help. We need to bring in the dogs. And
you're here.
Right. And I hope some people will understand why I'm going to say this. There's research on this. Church helps. Besides the connectedness, the spirituality has something to do with making you feel less isolated. You're connected, in this case, to a higher being. And then communities can make it a priority to look out for older people. There are other societies where older people are more valued and more cared for in general by the community. We see that in some communities, but not near enough.
We want to end, of course, on a positive note with a couple of takeaways here. And I'm reminded of another finding from other studies of physical diseases that sometimes the best treatment is prevention. How do we prevent social isolation? One of those things is building those key relationships, right?
Right. Relationships really matter. So, as many people say, my family and my friends are the most important thing to me. And I hope that's true. But I think one of the things we need to do is self-reflect. And does our time, how we allocate our time and our energy, reflect the fact that our family and our other loved ones are the most important thing? Guilty on my part. And working on this episode has really brought that to life. It's finding that, you know, elusive work-life balance. And then the other thing is social isolation is not inevitable. We have to remember that 14% of the people in the AARP study had significant signs of social isolation, but 86% didn't. So as we increase awareness, as we increase screening, do additional research, I think we can, as a society, find a way to address this problem, this modern societal problem.
Dr. Carol Myers of the University of Tennessee College of Nursing, you've been listening to Health Connections. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth.